I was looking for green. All right, let's turn to Genesis 27. We're going to talk about Esau for a little while. Sandra did a really good job talking about Esau a few months ago. But today we're going to look at, we've moved away from actual Bible people who said, I will never or I will not, into things that we have either heard other people say or we've actually thought or said ourselves. And I just picked some that, you know, are common, that you hear a lot. And today we're going to be talking about, have y'all ever heard somebody say, I'll never forgive him for that?
Or, oh, yeah.
Yeah, it happens a lot. And, you know, people hurt us, and, you know, sometimes on purpose and sometimes not. And what we need to learn, I guess what we need to remember is that our attitude should be, we need to be more like Jesus, because nobody's ever done anything to us that compares with what was done to Jesus.
Although Esau didn't say that, I think that was his attitude.
Right. That's why I said we're moving away from, I'm using him, but he didn't say that. We actually don't know that. And obviously from his reactions and the way it describes him and the fact that Jacob lived somewhere else for many, 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 many years and was scared to come home, I think it makes that very obvious. So we're not going to read this whole thing, because hopefully y'all did and everybody's familiar with the story anyway. But let's look at verse 41. After Jacob, Rebekah actually fixed the food for Jacob, and he put the hairy stuff on, which, just as a side note, I don't understand how a man could think a man with goat skins on could feel like a man, but he must have been super hairy. And then Rebekah fixed the food, and Jacob ate it, Isaac ate it and gave Jacob the blessing. And then Esau comes in with his kill, and he's ready and fixes his food and is ready for Isaac to eat it. And Isaac is, you know, he cannot give him a blessing because he's already given it to, he can't give him the same blessing because he's already given it to Jacob. So Esau's very upset, and verse 41 says, actually, Isaac did give him a blessing, but evidently it was lesser or not quite what he was expected as the firstborn. And he says, in the days of mourning for my father at hand, then I will kill my brother Jacob. Evidently, he at least had enough control or consideration, I guess, for his father, that he said he would wait till his father died. But he said, I will kill my brother Jacob. So what does that, and I'm calling that a lack of forgiveness because he didn't forgive him at this point. What does that indicate about what's in his heart? What kind of feelings?
Hatred.
Hatred?
Anger.
Bitterness.
Verse 41.
Mine says he hated him. I put bore grudge here somewhere. Yeah, bore grudge for years. I put for many years. But I know I didn't even look at that version.
You know, grudge in some ways just here.
Yeah, it just boils and boils.
And that's why I said, even though he didn't make that statement, that was his attitude. Because
right.
He held this in his heart. He wasn't, there was no forgiving. There wasn't even thinking about it.
Right. And he held on to it. That's a good way to put that, because when you hold something like that in your heart, what does that do? If I do that, what does that do to me?
It hurts you.
It hurts me. It kind of poisons me and my thinking and my attitude and my actions a lot of the time. And as far as we know, he held that grudge for years. I don't think there's really a lot in between this point and the point where Jacob and his family and all his holdings returned from Laban's area. But before we look at that end of it, do you feel any empathy for Esau in this particular situation?
No, because number one, he already sold his birthright, his attitude, and of course. Hebrews calls him an immoral and godless person, Hebrews 12:16. So that describes his heart before when he sold his birthright. And in verse 36, to me, because of the people that I've known that has this attitude, they have this self-righteous indignation about themselves. And it further convinces me that Esau had this in verse 36. He says he's already stolen my birthright. Well, he didn't steal it. He sold
exactly.
it.
Exactly. He did
and
not
so,
steal it.
And so even though Jacob
that was
not,
completely Esau's idea.
Yes, but Jacob Jacob was not sinless in that.
He took advantage.
But it was Esau who was in control. And then verse 42, Rebecca is saying he is consoling himself concerning you by planning to kill you. You know, it's like Pat was saying, this grudge, but they soothe their conscience for their failures and their lack of accomplishing things or things not going their way and put it on the other person.
Right.
And so,
that kind of attitude is different from a flash of anger where somebody kills in a fit of passion.
Exactly.
Even in our loss today, we see that.
Uh-huh. And so, you know, I see this heart. You know, that
okay, we'll come back to that in a minute. You're absolutely right, and Hebrews nails it. Did you want to say something, Nisha?
I was just thinking about that root of bitterness that talks about, you know, that Esau had in his heart.
Yeah, he took that into himself and nurtured himself with that. My Bible says comfort. Mm-hmm. Your brother comforts himself. He wanted to have that attitude. Okay, well, if we don't feel any empathy for it, can we look at it another way? Was he wrong? Oh, I'm sorry, Jamie, before we go to that, you have a comment.
I agree that he had a lot of bitterness. Birthright, he gave that away, but his blessing was stolen from him. And I think that if we lived in his culture, maybe we would realize how important that was. I don't know. I mean, I'm not living in there. I'm just saying that as a firstborn, you know, son, that was what he was supposed to have, and his brother stole it from
it was,
him.
He was definitely tripped.
And so he did get treated wrongly, and I do feel sorry for him that way, but he obviously handled the situation very well.
I agree.
Also, it has the connection with the birthright. Jacob, here his brother's hungry. And Jacob said, give me the birthright first. It wasn't like Esau just went up and said,
oh, he didn't just offer it.
No, he said, but Jacob said, first, sell me your birthright. He comes in and he says, please give me a swallow of the red stuff, or I'm famished. But Jacob said, first, sell me your birthright. Mm. So Jacob wasn't a nice person.
Well, he didn't. This whole thing wasn't his idea. This second time.
No, the second time wasn't, but the first time was. He knew that the birthright brought a lot of blessings and privileges, and he wanted it. So he's willing to let his brother say, "Okay, if you don't give it to me, you die, you starve to death, and then I'll get it anyway."
So he probably deserved getting tricked with the wrong wife.
He
got to see what it felt like on the other side of the deal, didn't he?
That just shows there's consequences to
absolutely
all behavior. Whether you're in the right or the wrong, there are consequences.
I do. I agree with Jamie. I do believe he was wronged. I don't think what either one of them did was right. But the fact that what we're focusing on today is the fact that he took this bitterness in his heart, this anger and this hatred, and he bore the grudge, and he, who knows what in the world his life was like in the intervening years between the time that Jacob left and the time he came back.
Well, we know that he didn't have any compassion for his parents because
Esau or Jacob?
Esau, because even, you know, he saw that they sent Jacob away, and so he just goes out and marries more women that he knows are going to make them unhappy.
That's right.
So he still, you know, he has vengeance even for his parents. And I'm not saying he shouldn't for his mother a little bit, you know. But see, all this started with the parents when they have favorites. You know, one thing leads to another and to another, and so sometimes what we do as parents, if we show partiality and favoritism, then we wonder
things
why
pop
our kids
up way down the line.
Yeah, and then you wonder why the kids don't get along when their mm-hmm. parents are dead.
Or you wonder why they're doing what they're doing with their kids. Mm-hmm. Or not doing. So on. Okay, well, I also wanted to point out here that I don't think, unless I missed it, I didn't see any evidence that Jacob asked for forgiveness. He just kind of ran off in the night, basically, again, with his mother's help. And obviously God blessed him. You know, when he was living with Laban and his other relatives, and he came back with a huge accumulation of livestock and possessions and so on.
We did forgive him here, but you asked Paul to go about, is there any evidence that...
We're getting there.
Oh, okay.
We're getting there.
Okay.
I meant between the time he left and the time he came back.
No.
But when, let's turn over to 32. And in verse 3 through 6, Jacob is fixing to return, and he has to pass through where? Where did Esau live?
Edom.
He has to go through there. So he sends ahead, you know, gifts and people and all this because Oh, wait, that's not the verse I was looking for. Oh, verse 7. He was a greatly what?
Afraid.
And distressed. He didn't know how Esau was going to react. He had no idea what was going to happen. Because he grew up over the intervening years and matured into a little bit better person. So he divided his family and possessions into, you know, to protect them, and I guess two companies to protect them, you know, for one at least could escape. But he also sent ahead. Well, in here somewhere he sent gifts or 400 men, I guess. I don't know if I was thinking it said he sent gifts.
Verse 13.
Yeah, I should have written that down. 200 female goats, 20 male goats, 200 ewes, 20 rams, 30 milk camels and their colts, 40 cows, 10 bulls, 20 female donkeys, and 10 foals. This is a lot of animals, you know, to send ahead. And he, like I said, he had no idea how Esau was going to react. But how did Esau react?
He didn't want to take them.
Right. He came running up to him, fell on his neck, and hugged him, and cried and happy, and said, "I don't need your stuff. You know, I'm fine." And evidently he maybe matured and grew up over the intervening years.
Well, he wanted to help Jacob along. You know, he wanted to stay with him and help him. And Jacob persuaded him, "No, you go on because I have small children, I have animals, I can't go as fast." And so, you know, but he offered. It wasn't like, okay, here I am and now I'm gone again.
He was offering to help. And so, you know, it gives me hope anyway for the fact that people can get past their feelings. And I don't know what Esau did to get past his anger and his hatred and everything. Maybe just an intervention of time. Sometimes time makes a difference in our thoughts and actions and feelings about things.
You know, one thing I learned too, he was still close enough, and evidently he had some interaction with his parents. He was a wealthy man. He had all these wives and kids, and
he didn't go that far from them.
I could see where he thought, you know, I got the best end of this deal. An immediate part, because he doesn't know by this time that Jacob, as far as we know, that Jacob is wealthy. And
You know, what you said a while ago about the his disrespect for his parents, I wonder how big a deal was made when Rebecca told Isaac that she was weary of the daughters of Heth and she wanted Jacob to go back to their family. I assume in Haran, I don't know where they still live, Canaan. They're in Canaan, Padan Aram. So maybe Esau's marrying all these women in the local area was a reaction to that. You know, they're not good enough for him, and you know he gets to go back to where they like the people. And so I'm just gonna, you know, who knows? And that goes along with what you were talking about a while ago.
Well, in verse 8,
favoritism.
28:8, he said Esau saw that the daughters of Canaan displeased his father, so he went.
Yeah. So he deliberately did it.
Besides the wives he had.
Yeah.
Some more women.
Okay. Oh, good honk. It just rolled on my head.
Nobody will see it.
Oh, sorry. All right. Well, let's turn to Genesis 37 and talk about Joseph a little bit. And I know we've talked about Joseph before, but in this case, how might things have gone differently for his brothers if he had had an attitude like Esau had initially? The nation would have been wiped out, wouldn't it? Obviously, we all know, you know, from our point in history, looking back on it, that this was God's plan, that Joseph was put there for a reason. He knew the famine was coming, and it was a symbolic thing for the non-Hebrews. But, I mean, they would end up in prison, the people would have died out, the eradication of the race, and, you know, what would that have said about for the Exodus? What would have been, you know,
it wouldn't
have been there. So, Joseph, in addition to being treated badly by his brothers, for whom he obviously never held a grudge, he was, on top of that, he was treated unjustly when he was in Egypt. You know, his character was obvious, and he was respected and rewarded for that, and then he was still mistreated. Because other people are wicked and self-centered and, you know, they want things their way. So, to me, this is just a stellar example of somebody who's been badly, badly treated. You know, I mentioned Jesus a while ago and how badly he was treated, and how anything that ever happens to us would never measure up to how he was treated. But even, but Joseph too, even before Jesus' lifetime, you know, as far as I can tell, he never made a mistake. At least none that we know about.
It's, well, he sinned.
Obviously, he was human, but I mean, as far as his attitude to the way he was treated, he just, he trusted God to make sure that he would be taken care of, and he was. Do you think it's natural in mankind? Is it natural to have a forgiving attitude, to be forgiving?
No, it has to be learned.
I agree, because I think we all know as babies, you know, how babies are concerned about being fed and comfortable and dry and taken care of. And, you know, you as they grow up, that children have to be taught that they're not the center of the universe. And a lot of people never learn that lesson. And I think that contributes toward them thinking everybody's out to get them, or when somebody mistreats them that they can't let it go. But I agree. I think we have to learn it, and I think it's something that, because we're commanded to be that way, we're going to talk some more in the next three questions about, you know, why. Why do we have to be that way? Anybody have anything to say about the first, about Esau or Joseph or any of that stuff?
I think it is the difference in the hearts, as you noticed. A godless man who didn't have regard for God or his ways, even to spite his parents, to a Joseph who trusted in God, who gave God the glory for everything, and no matter what the circumstance, tried to do what was right, and so God blessed him. And so I think that comes down to, you know, how we have to watch our heart and where our heart is, because if we don't watch our heart and keep that respect for God and his ways and his word, then we can fall into the same kind. And it was a gradual thing. This didn't just happen, you know, like you said, that something happened and then there's this anger and react. This is over some time and this bitterness building up and godless and this bitterness and immoral that Hebrews talks about. In Esau, this is not something that's lightly, thought.
You know, and something else we need to remember is that God has not necessarily promised us the kind of blessings that came to Joseph or to Jacob because of their hearts and their attitudes. But if we can remember that we do have a promise of spiritual blessings and, you know, life after death if we're faithful and if we trust God and order our hearts after his will. Sometimes that's hard to remember because that's not something we can see. It's not something we see happening to other people. It's something that we have to trust and, you know, and believe is in our future eventually.
I do believe this is something that people have to be taught from God's Word. Joseph was only 17 years old when his brothers sold him. He was very, very young.
Well, he had a father, though.
I know, but he had the dreams, and, you know, they'd had all this trouble. So evidently what Jacob had done is somehow is instill faith in God and realizing. So, you know, we may not can cover all the bases, such as forgiveness and anger and all that, but if from a very early age we can instill fear and love of God in our children's heart and instill in them how important it is to do God's will. And we're so blessed today, at least we have a book we can hand them when they get old enough, or even when they're little, teach them to treasure this book. Where Joseph, it was all word of mouth. They didn't have it all written down. Where, you know, Jacob couldn't tell him, go read Genesis so-and-so and read the Ten Commandments. They didn't have all that. That wasn't even written yet. And so, but I think sometimes, like Linda said, I think it depends on our heart. And some people have a good and honest heart, and some people don't. And those that don't, I don't care what you do, I don't care how good you are to them, I don't care what you teach them. I don't care if it's your own kids. There's some people that their heart is turned toward evil, and they are the only ones that can turn it around.
All right, and the New Testament tells us that the good and honest heart is the one that's going to accept the truth and learn to live by it. All right, let's go to Ephesians 4. Elizabeth, would you read verse 32, please?
Be kind to one another, tender-hearted, forgiving each other, for God in Christ also has forgiven you.
Okay, so this particular verse I wanted to focus on, and this is a commandment, is how should we forgive?
Like God forgave
us. When God forgives us, what does that mean?
It means it's washed away. It's no more.
Right. When our sins are washed away or taken away through, you know, repentance and confession and forgiveness.
Dwell on it the rest.
Right. It's not written down, and they bring it back up again when you mess up again.
His wrath is not towards us anymore for that. He cleanses us. You know, it's when we sin, and God's wrath is there against sin. When he forgives, that turns his wrath away. So when we talk about anger, why go? And so it turns.
Do you have a verse?
Oh, let me see.
Jeremiah 31:34. God says, "I will remember it no more."
Okay, but I'm talking about a verse for turning wrath away.
Says, cleanse and pardon, Jeremiah. He will turn his wrath away from them. You know, all of the prophets. I was reading Jeremiah. I was reading Hosea. You can read in the prophets. It says, and it, because God's wrath was against Israel.
I believe you. I'm not.
So you know, it,
trying to contradict you. Okay.
Because
I think that's something that didn't occur to me.
Yes,
so, that's why I wanted the verse.
You know, God's anger, and in the day of God's wrath, when we talk about Judgment Day. It is, you know, written, and we can read it in Revelation, and we can read it in 1 Corinthians and everything. God's wrath is going to be there. And so, against those that do not obey him.
Okay, but that doesn't have anything to do with how we forgive. We don't have any business having wrath. What I want to talk about is what our attitude should be when we forgive one another for wronging us. And obviously, it's as Christ gave us, but what else would be involved in there? Anybody have anything else?
Tenderheartedness.
I could. I put down Luke 15 about the prodigal son. You know, the older brother was angry and petulant and jealous, and the focus there is on a full forgiveness and without bitterness. You know, for what? Yes, he's hurt his father. He even hurt the brother, but the father was so thrilled that he had turned his life around. As our father will be, you know, if that's the case with us or with anyone, then you know we need to go along with that same attitude. And now maybe you're. Wrath thing maybe would go better under number four, Linda, because when I wanted to talk about why, that is a good goal to have God's wrath turned away from us.
In James 2:13, it says, judgment will be merciless to one who has not shown mercy. So, you know, when we forgive, we show mercy. And so, you know, it's God is going to show mercy. To those
right.
When we forgive. As God forgives us, he shows mercy to us and favor to us to do that. And so, you know, it has to be a kind thing, it has to be a merciful thing
right.
to forgive.
Okay. That the attitude has to be, you know, with love and tenderness and mercy. And the reason for that is why? Do we expect the same behavior?
Yes.
Do we hope that for God's forgiveness or for God's mercy on us when we've messed up?
Without hope, if we don't have it.
That's right. You know, if we don't forgive, we can't be forgiven. That's in Mark 11, Matthew 6. We're dependent on God's forgiveness. Let's look at Romans 3. Everybody's familiar with this passage where it says all what? Romans 3:23. Absolutely. And then also in verse 10, as it is written, there is none righteous, no, not one. You know, we're not perfect and we're going to sin and we need mercy all the time. And if we're not willing to extend that mercy to somebody who has wronged us, you know, how in the world can we expect God to forgive us when we wrong him? Which, we're human, we do sin. It's not, you know, maybe not on a minute-by-minute basis, but we all make mistakes. You know, I had James 3:2 down. Oh no, you said James 2:13. James 3:2 mentions our need for forgiveness. It says, "We all stumble in many things. If anyone does not stumble in word, he is a perfect man, able to bridle the whole body." And then it goes on to talk about the the different aspects of the tongue. But we need forgiveness. We're not going to have any hope at all without it. And then on number five, I told Sandra and Deanna last night, I have no idea what I wanted different on here. So if y'all, to me it's kind of the same as the preceding two questions. Did anybody come up with something? Sorry, it was one of those questions that I did write that our unwillingness to forgive can block God from forgiving us. You know, it's kind of like your prayers aren't answered if you're not living right. And if we withhold that from someone, especially someone who's asking for it, who is penitent or who is sorry, and then on the following that through, if we aren't forgiven, where does that leave us with God?
We are not his child, number one. Right. You know, in fact, the very next verse from your 4:32 there in Ephesians, chapter 5, just carries on. Therefore, be imitators of God, his beloved children, and walk in love. As God so loved us, he forgives us when we repent. We should, as his children, being like him, want to forgive others and should forgive others because of the love factor. And, in number four there, I had the fear factor, the love factor, and the human factor. And the fear factor is that God's not going to forgive me, you know, and he's going to judge me and I'm going to go to hell. And the love factor is because I am a follower of Christ, because I want to be more like him, because I claim him as my Lord, I want to act like him and glorify him in my life. And then the human factor is I want to be forgiven, just like you covered. You know, I want others, if I want others to treat me and forgive me, then, you know, Matthew 7:12 is that verse that says, and you treat others as you would have them treat you. And that's the way
right,
to say it.
Right.
But,
In connection with that, Linda, too, you know, who am I to withhold forgiveness? You know, what is so special about me that if somebody does something wrong to me that I'm allowed to not forgive them?
Exactly.
You know, it goes back to the Philippians 2, where, you know, Christ emptied himself. You know, consider other people as better than yourself. You know, do nothing through selfish ambition or conceit, but in lowliness of mind, esteem others better than self. If nothing else, think of them as, you know, better than me, and, you know, maybe give them the benefit of the doubt. You know, oftentimes it's hard to forgive somebody who continues doing the same thing. And I know Steve preaches that we're not required to forgive if there's no repentance. But I think sometimes, if it's something that's eating me up, then it's better for me to let it go. Maybe that's not the same thing as forgiveness. I don't know. But put that person above yourself in your thoughts and, you know, I don't think people sit around putting people on levels or stratuses, but they, you know, we have to consider others as better than ourselves and do what we can for them. You know, it's a thing like, yes, I want to go to heaven, but don't I want all these other people to go to heaven too? Try to do what is best for them.
It's not holding forgiveness and holding this grudge to where you're going to take vengeance and take care of them like what Esau wanted to do. Rather than, if Esau would have just, when Jacob stole his birthright, but, you know, or was so wrong the way he treated him, here he comes in hungry and he'll only feed him if he gives him his birthright. He must have held on to that because he, you know, his sin was
brought it up.
My birthright. Mm-hmm. And then he did this, and so now he's got this grudge that, and all that does is hurt us. But we can let it go, but as far as they're getting forgiveness, God's not going to forgive them if they don't repent. We may move on past it and forget it and let God deal with them. And I think that should be our attitude rather than, you know, I just worry about this. Why don't they get their own? Why do they, you know, because of what they did to me, I want them to hurt. Rather just go to God and know, if not in this life, in the life to come.
And that's back to the human factor. That's just natural to feel that way because when we're hurting, you know, it's hard not to be bad.
We feel like what somebody else has done to us is worse than anything we could have ever done. And so,
or that's been ever done to anybody else.
Yeah, but if we stop and think that the person that was sinless died for us, he was murdered. How much worse can you get than that? Murdering somebody who all they did was come to help you. And so that could nothing worse could ever be done to me.
That's right. Okay, let's go to the next page and look at number five. Let's turn to 1 Corinthians 13. Four through seven. Sandra, would you read that, please?
The government crucified on the wrong book, sorry. Charity suffereth long and is kind. Charity envieth not. Charity vaunteth not itself, is not puffed up, doth not behave itself unseemly, seeketh not her own, is not easily provoked, thinketh no evil, rejoiceth not in iniquity, but rejoiceth in the truth. Beareth all things, believeth all things, hopeth all things, and endureth all things.
Do you have King James?
Yeah.
Okay. If we, so according to this verse, what do we need to do in regard to our relationships to make sure that we groom and foster an attitude of forgiveness? Right. It's pretty simple. Love. I mean, I just wrote down every single one of these things. And I also referred back to Philippians 2 again. If we are considering others as better than ourselves and love them, then we want what's best for them. And there's no reason to withhold forgiveness if we have the other person's best interests at heart. Doesn't matter how badly I'm hurt or how it affects my life. Maybe it's a huge life-changing event. And, you know, it's still more important that you worry about the other person's soul's condition, I think. Anything else on that? Jamie?
I have a friend one time, and she's Baptist, but she, even though she's Baptist, she still, you know, a lot of her beliefs are very much Bible. And I was having a problem one time, and I asked her, what should I do? Because I'm really upset about this thing. And she said, pray for that person. That's what you need to do. You need to pray for that person. And when I prayed for that person, it made me feel better because I realized, okay, I'm not just doing this because I'm angry. I'm doing this because I'm trying to actually help this person.
Right. So, put the other person before yourself.
Exactly. So I think that if we pray, that's one way we can show love for someone, is to pray for them and help and ask that God relieve whatever pressures in their lives they have or whatever, you know.
Mm-hmm. I think that's very valid advice. Very valid. You know, we're told to pray for our enemies, but maybe it's not an enemy. Maybe it's somebody who's close to us and has hurt us and we don't know how to deal with it and they're being stubborn or whatever. But I think that's good advice. And I know that works. I know that works too. Okay, let's look at 2 Corinthians 2, 5 through 11. Nisha, can you read?
But if any has caused sorrow, he has caused sorrow not to me, but in some degree, in order not to say too much to all of you. Sufficient for such a one is the punishment which was inflicted by the majority. So that on the contrary, you should rather forgive and comfort him, lest someone, such a one, be overwhelmed by excessive sorrow. Wherefore I urge you to reaffirm your love for him. For to this end also I wrote that I might put you to the test, whether you are obedient in all things. But whom you forgive anything, I forgive also. For indeed what I have forgiven, if I have forgiven anything, I did it for your sake in the presence of Christ, in order that no advantage be taken of us by Satan. For we are not ignorant of his schemes.
Okay, who are we talking about here? From 1 Corinthians 5, the man who was sleeping with his father's wife. And evidently, you know, the man has repented, hopefully, and Paul is urging the Corinthians to do what?
To reaffirm their love. You know,
exactly.
It takes caring love to give godly discipline. And it takes caring, that same caring love, to comfort and encourage and lift up the penitent. You know,
absolutely.
To bring him back.
You know, reaffirm that love, forgive and comfort, because obviously if the man's heart is truly penitent, then he's feeling pretty low and he needs encouragement, he needs comfort, and he needs love to be able to overcome the problems in his life and you know, maybe his self-loathing or whatever for what he's done. He's got to be able to move on, and who better to help him than the people who were trying to help him remove that sin from his life? I think this is a step a lot of people forget. You know, it's hard to look at a person sitting on the pew that's done something really horrible. I mean, I can think of an example of a person that whose sin was pretty vile, and I know people had a hard time hearing him sing or being near him, and that it's difficult. That's another one of those human traits I think it's hard to get past. But we're commanded to do it, and we've got to work on it. And again, if we put that person's welfare above our own, then we can do everything in our power to help that person stay restored. Where is it? Galatians, where it talks about restoring. Is it Galatians 6? If any man is overtaken in a trespass, you who are spiritual, restore such a one in a spirit of gentleness, considering yourself, lest you also be tempted. That's another aspect of it. You know, how do we know that ain't going to happen to us one day? And how are we going to be retreated if we get ourselves out of that morass and try to get back in God's good graces and our brethren's good graces? How? What if people are all standoffish and don't want to have anything to do with me? We need to try our best to put ourselves in the other person's shoes and have some compassion. Sometimes it's just a matter of compassion, you know, for that person's failings. You know, some people are weaker than others. Some people are weak in areas that other people would never be, and vice versa. So it also goes all the way back to love. We have to, you know, we have to love to do that.
I think this is a great lesson for parents and dealing with their children. You know, the children disobey, you discipline, and I think it is very important that then, after the discipline, to reconnect, to encourage, to comfort, say, you know, and then to make them feel like they're all right with you again.
Right.
And that way they can learn the lesson that you won't, put up with bad behavior, that there are consequences, but then there's reconnection and love, that you love them, you know, again. And I think it gives them stability.
Absolutely.
Emotionally.
Okay, Ephesians 4 again, this time in 26 and 27. Pat, you want to read that?
Be angry, and yet do not sin. Do not let the sun go down on your anger, and do not give the devil an opportunity.
Okay, so what does this have to do with forgiveness?
What I got out of it was anger will cause us to sin.
Yeah, it's Esau was very angry. And I don't think it ever mentions Joseph being angry about what was done to him, but it's hard not to be angry when you're mistreated and are wronged. So this, according to this verse, we need to either control our anger or end it, with whatever the case may be. And that's something I think that's also hard for humans sometimes. Some people have more trouble with that than others. Some people have a tendency to flare up more quickly or more easily than others. But we need to learn to control our anger as far as our... Because if there's a lot of anger in our heart, what is not going to be there? Love. There will not be love. And, you know, one of the things about love suffers long, not provoked. I was thinking there's something there about anger. It's not envy. I guess not specifically. But it's just something that we need to be careful of. I just thought it was kind of important to throw that in there because... It's so easy to be angry when we're wrong.
It's hard to be patient and kind when you're angry.
Absolutely. It's hard to not think evil or rejoice in iniquity. Yes, ma'am?
I think that's why God said, don't let the sun go down your anger. You know, we all are going to have anger, but it's not letting the devil take that anger like he did with Cain and...
Let it
and
fester.
Go into other bitterness, yeah. Wrath, anger. Verse 31 of your chapter 4 there, clamor, slander, malice, but be kind and tenderhearted. So you see, if we let our anger get control of us, then the devil runs rampant and we go into all these. How many times do we get angry and we say something we shouldn't say? Mm-hmm. Or we let this bitterness stew like Esau did and like Cain did? And then we clamor, we fuss, we go out there and we fuss and we fuss and you know
we start slandering or gossiping or talking to the wrong people or
exactly and malice then all of a sudden it's murder or it's whatever.
Yeah,
it affects every aspect of our life if we can't get rid of that anger, and especially I think in Christians,
right.
If you harbor anger and resentment for people, it just starts affecting everything you do.
Right, and you really can't forgive if you're angry. You've got to get rid of that first. And if it's like unforgiveness, if you harbor that in your heart, you know, if in the same with anger, you can't move on to these other things. You can't have these other good emotions. It crowds them out.
It's interesting. He warns over and over. Back in 2 Corinthians 2:11, he said, "And give Satan no advantage." He's talking to him about forgiveness, and he said, "So that," he said, "so that no advantage would be taken of us by Satan."
What verse was that?
2 Corinthians 2:11.
Oh, on the other page.
You had. So Satan knows how to work us and how to use things to his advantage. And we need to be aware of his schemes and how he tempts us. Galatians 6:1, so that you yourself not be tempted. Over and over, we're warned about these in several areas about things that is going to lead us to sin. Where if we don't do, if we don't have the proper love, if we don't forgive, if we don't have that right attitude in our brothers or brother.
Okay. Let's go to James 1:19-20. Jamie?
I have a question. I've always thought that verse was saying that you take care of whatever conflict you have with the person.
Well, that's what I said. I don't know about that. I said either control it or end it. To me, if you've got anger, I don't think anger is necessarily a sin. It can be. But because Jesus displayed anger. But you're saying don't do it? You thought it meant don't do it?
No, I thought it meant like take care of it rather than like don't.
Oh, okay.
Like if someone's done something to you and somebody says, well, you shouldn't deal with that because it might hurt someone's feelings or something, you shouldn't listen to that. You should definitely be like, I'm sorry, this is hurting me so much. I have to go talk to this person now. Because if you don't take care of it now, your anger is just going to keep building and building. And then that person may not even know you're angry with them or may not even realize what they did was hurtful. Or I just have always thought that this verse meant, you know, be angry, don't let the sun go down with your anger. Don't let there be talk.
Okay, well, you don't think that's the same thing as not letting it, you know, take root in your heart and grow and grow and grow? Take care of it now?
I don't know. With me, maybe something wrong with me, but when I get angry, I feel like I need to go talk to the person so that I don't feel angry with them anymore. I can't just be like, oh, well, he wronged me and I'll just...
Okay, well, I don't think that's the right attitude either, but I don't know that it means you have to go talk to him right now, because sometimes it's a matter of changing my thinking instead of talking to that person. Maybe I'm angry for no reason. And maybe sometimes I might need to talk to somebody else about it to get my thinking straight. But, you know, you may be right. I think there are a lot of situations where you need to talk to a person if you're angry about something.
In Matthew, the 5th chapter, Jesus deals with one aspect of that. After he just gets through saying if anyone's angry with his brother and he's guilty of the court and so forth, in verse 23, if therefore you are presenting your offering at the altar and there remember that your brother has something against you, leave your offering there before the altar and go your way. First be reconciled to your brother and then come and present your offering. Matthew 18 talks about when someone is in sin against you, and you go and talk to them, you know, and then if he doesn't listen, you take a brother.
Okay, but that's not necessarily involving anger.
Matthew 18. Jamie feels like that she has to deal righteously with something, but the Lord does give us two examples,
yes,
especially in chapter 5 of anger is in the subject matter above that. Don't be angry and don't let it get out of control and go to wrath and saying calling wrath up. And this is talking about malice and all this in the heart, seeking bad things.
Yes, and I think that's what she is talking about.
Yeah.
But I don't know that the verse in Ephesians is.
Leave your gift, you know, not even go to the altar and everything. If you feel like this, something's going on,
absolutely,
there,
Linda,
go and
I
talk
agree.
To that person.
And I think is that what you're talking about, Jamie?
Yeah, that's what I was wondering, because I just thought it was the same idea as those other passages saying take care of whatever problem you have with a person as soon as it happens. Otherwise,
think we're really disagreeing. What does anybody else think?
I think that, well, in your next scripture, it tells us to be slow to speak. And I think sometimes we have to really think. We have to take the time to really think about what maybe somebody has said to us or about us or before we open our mouth and start. Yeah.
Well, that same verse also says slow to wrath.
Right.
So, you know, don't be a flash fire, you know, about everything.
You know, if you think of Esau, if he had reacted, he was ready to go kill his brother.
Mm-hmm.
If he hadn't. God gave him years. He's lucky. I mean, fortunate.
Yeah.
You know, that he was able to have that time. But, hey, we don't know that we're going to have that time, so...
Well, back to Ephesians 4. I don't know that I necessarily think that this is telling you to deal with it right now. I think the other verses that Linda's talking about in Matthew 5 and 18, definitely, you know, if you have obviously your worship is flawed or unacceptable, if your heart is not right with somebody, if you've got a problem with somebody, or, you know, that kind of thing. And yes, you need to deal with that. But this place here, where, you know, talking about not letting the sun go down on your wrath, I think that's definitely saying, you know, don't let it stew. Don't let it build up. Don't let it turn into something else, you know. Because, I mean, it can turn into it can turn into jealousy. It can turn into, if you let bitterness get in, you know, that can take a long time to get that out. So, anybody else?
It's interesting. This came evidently from Psalms chapter 4, verse 4. And it reads, tremble and do not sin. Meditate in your heart upon your bed and be still. Offer the sacrifices of righteous and trust in the Lord. So I think we do, if we have a problem, I think Jamie's right, if we have a problem that is going to cause us to sin, we need to deal with it. But we better be sure that it's something that's not our fault that we need to deal with. Because sometimes people get angry. And all they want to do is they want to give you a piece of their mind.
Mm-hmm.
They've not considered, they've not thought it through, they're not sure about what the situation is. And so we don't want to take this back in Ephesians just to say, okay, and in the verse Linda mentioned, it's if you know your brother has something against you. It's not you have something against your brother. Mm-hmm. You know your brother has a problem with you, and yes, you need to go take care of that. But sometimes with us, I get my feelings hurt or I get upset about something, and I need to meditate and think it through before I go, because I cause more problems by not doing that. Studying, be sure that I have a right to be called.
So,
if somebody steals something from me or kills my husband or something like that, yeah, you have to stop and think that through. But that's not how most of our life is. Most of our life is something is said or something is done, and we need to be sure that we have all the facts before we go and start digging with it. And that may not be what Jamie's talking about, I don't know. But if she's right, if it's something that's going to cause her anger and problems with that person, she does need to go talk to them. But even when we do that, we need to be sure we go with the right spirit and with the right attitude.
Okay. I remember people telling me that this applied to a marriage, you know, like if you've got a problem with your husband, don't go to bed because it'll just make it worse. If you don't deal with it, you know, don't let it build up. But I really think it, I'm not even sure it's literal. I think it may even be figurative, and I could be completely all wet, but to me, it's the focus is on don't let it take root. Do something about it before it becomes, the controlling factor in your life, or it's eats you up, and that kind of thing. So, you know, y'all are welcome to disagree or whatever. I don't know.
I go back to 1 Corinthians 13, where you
still left. Yeah.
About thinking the best, you know, and being patient. And, you know, and like before, I've had to stop and think, and like I said, like Pat was reading, meditate on my bed, and get my emotions under mm-hmm. control before I even deal, even though it's blatant, you know, that they've wronged,
right.
Been wrong. But to not let my anger and my disappointment and my, whatever, that has caused me discouragement or whatever, get in the way of dealing with it rightly.
Right. Or of serving the Lord, or of serving my brethren,
right.
or growing in knowledge, that kind of thing.
And sometimes we just let it go.
Yeah, sometimes we have to just let it go because it's not something that we can change, maybe.
Well, and sometimes the person sees it totally different than we do. And
right.
We have to look at the whole person.
People look at things from a different perspective.
But we have to look at that person's whole life and realize that, okay, we see this differently, but that doesn't mean that they're not truly a Christian. It doesn't mean they really want to serve, don't really want to serve God, because we don't want them to judge us even though we disagree, because there are times, even between a husband and a wife, there comes a time when you just have to agree to disagree and move on. Because you're never going to 100%
right.
agree with everybody all the time. It just doesn't work that way.
That's right. Okay, we're going to have to quit right there. Finish this lesson next week and go into the next one about my children will never do this. This is one of my famous ones. I think I said that a lot.
I'll be sure to take that because I
won't do. Okay, I'll see that one gets taken. Okay, let's.